Let me read, and I'll comment as I go because of the length of this. Your first section here. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening. Stop there. Who are the two angels? There were three men that stopped by in Genesis chapter 18. Remember that Abraham offered hospitality to, and one of them apparently was God himself. Because it says Abraham stood before the Lord. Okay, so there's no question. We don't know exactly what he looked like. He's most likely a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ. But we don't know. But the other two apparently were angels. And they went on while Abraham stopped and talked to the Lord. So that's what it, the two angels, it kind of picks up from there, right? It's just talking about these two men that were actually angels. They came to Sodom in the evening. Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. What does that mean? What can you say about Lot there? When he's sitting in the gate of a city. Mm-hmm. That's you were like a judge, you were a leader. People came to the gate to get business done. Okay? To get legal things resolved. So he had gained some status there. I never eat while I'm teaching. It gets in the way, but boy, this cookie's good. So whoever brought the cookie?
Paula did.
Okay, well, you tell Paula all that chomping that she's going to listen to for the Sunday school class. Paula, it's your fault. When Lot saw them, these two men, he rose up to meet them and bowed himself with his face to the ground. Probably customary, okay? And he said, "Hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go your way." There's a couple of things you could probably ascertain from this. They weren't from the area. He recognized that somehow. He hadn't seen him before. And I don't know if you noticed this, but he wants to get him out of there quick. You can rise early and get out of here. Okay? And they said, "No, but we will spend the night in the open square." But he insisted strongly so that they turned into him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. By the way, that, again, was more expected to some degree or another in the culture, but that's what you did, too. It was absolutely wrong not to do that. So I just call the first one Lot welcomes. It's a very much a summary type point here, but Lot welcomes the men, the angels. Welcomes. Last bit of cookie. Sorry, Paula. Make nasty cookies next time. Okay. Now, we all know the story, but what's the hint about Sodom and Gomorrah? Hurry, come on in here quick, and you can leave quick in the morning, right? That's the idea here. Verse 4, that second section. Now, before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter surrounded the house. He's got an ink pen.
This guy
here. Need an ink pen? I don't think I have any more in here. We can share. Walter could probably fill them out without me anyway. Okay, so they surrounded the house. They came from all over. The Bible says every quarter. Thanks, Georgia, for caring for people and showing how careless we are ourselves. From every quarter surrounded the house. Wow, news got out quickly. And men of Sodom, both old and young. This was like pervasive. This was like pervasive all over the town, you know. It wasn't a few people, it was the town. And they called out to Lot and said, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally." They wanted to molest them. They wanted to, for lack of a better term, rape them. By the way, if teachers are going to be listening to this, I would use very general terms. You probably could just read this and then move on. Younger kids don't need to know all the details. So Lot went out to them through the doorway, shut the door behind them, and said, "Please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly." He calls them brethren. Okay. Probably need, it's kind words. It's not, you know, that's all I'm implying here. He pleads with them. The only challenge is that you could see is that you're kind of talking to a wall at this point because you're in an environment that's what they do. That's why he wanted to whisk these two angels. I don't know that he understood that they were even angels. I don't know. But he whisked them into his house and wanted to kick him out early because he knew exactly what was going to happen. So he goes and tries to talk to people that live by their flesh, live by the lust of their flesh, and are used to doing so, apparently. Okay? See now, I have two daughters. This is what blows your mind. And I don't even know what to say on this. See now, I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come under the shadow of my roof. Now, I know there's an implicit demand for you to protect whoever comes under your roof that we probably do not understand. I do not understand why you would trade your daughters for that.
That might show the determination they have.
Well, it does show the determination, but I'm talking about Lot's offer, not the people outside. Because, I mean, I know I'm a brave man standing behind a pulpit among friends, but over my dead body. You know what I'm saying? If they have their way with my daughters, it'll be after they have killed me. Okay? And I don't think that's inappropriate. In fact, that's a biblical response. Okay? I would do everything in my power to protect them. I don't get this. If you can shed light on it. But that's what he offered. Back to what Pastor Jim said, it shows that they're not even interested. That is how wholly perverse these people are. Okay? And again, I don't understand this. I don't. I have nine daughters. And I'd die for any one of them. Okay? So, but I don't understand this. Some people say that's it is under he saw his responsibility that he could not, even at the cost of his whole family. It's interesting that he didn't offer himself. Side note. So I don't know if he's, you know, if that says anything or not. I don't know. And maybe he knew they would say no. I don't know. I don't know his, you know, offering milk to someone who doesn't.
What amazes me is that they did not force themselves to the point where the whole house was in jeopardy. Because I'm.
Well, I don't think they had a chance. Let's just keep going because of time. I agree, but I don't think they had a chance. They didn't get a chance to get there. Okay? He says, don't do this. For this reason, they have come under the shadow of my roof. And he senses a responsibility for people that he's brought in under his house to protect them. Even to the point of offering his daughters, which, again, I cannot fathom. Okay? And I don't fully understand. And I'm not in any way affirming or allowing for that. I just can't see how that would be okay. But understand, it's such a perverse environment. These girls, as wicked as the environment is, apparently had not ever had a relationship with a man before. Okay? So it's an amazing thing, the whole bit, that I don't claim to be able to even explain it. But that's what he did. But I think it has something to do with having people under your home. And maybe he understood how special they were. And he was thinking he was going to protect them. And if you go on, as we will, they didn't really need his help, thank you. Right? You're being stupid. You're not really, you know, maybe turn around and ask for help instead of offering up your daughters. I don't know. I'm looking from the outside, looking in. I'm not in his house with the door being beaten down. Okay, and I don't understand all that. Number 9, verse 9. And he said, stand. They said, stand back. And they said, this one came to stay here, and he keeps acting as a judge. You know, outside the city gate, right? Now we will deal worse with you than with them. So they pressed hard against the man Lot and came near to breaking the door. So they were going to just grab him. And I don't think they would have been done with grabbing him. So then the people he's trying to protect saved his life, but the men reached out their hands and pulled Lot into the house with them. They apparently were pretty beefy, strong guys. I'm not talking about how they looked, but how they were. They had no problem opening the door and shutting the door and grabbing Lot. That's, I think, profound even there by what was going on. And then the men that Lot was trying to protect struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great. So they couldn't see, which impeded them. That was new. But what did they do? This is an amazing part. It shows you how perverse they are. They didn't go home. It didn't even slow them down, except for the fact that they had a hard time. They grew weary trying to find the door. That's how sinful and wicked these men were. Nothing was going to stop them. So, as a summary point, I just say Sodom displays its wickedness. That's number two, right? That's a good display right there. Sodom displays its wickedness. These men come from all parts of the city. We're not talking a few people. We're talking about and young and old. This is like an entire, this is the town. And by the way, it wasn't new. It was wicked when Lot chose to live in that direction and ended up in the town. Verse 12 there, and number 3. Then the men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here?" This is amazing. This is the grace of God in action. Do you have anyone else here? Son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city? Take them out of this place. So he says, and I don't know, did he have sons too? They seem to, they might have known about it. They're asking. Maybe he had 10 kids, you know, or whatever. Maybe there was, maybe 10 was aiming low for Abraham. You know, maybe Abraham wasn't cutting off at 10. Maybe he expected there would be 15 or 20 if you count Lot's entire extended family. Sons-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city, take them out of this place, for we will destroy this place because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. Again, you can comment on the side that nothing, God is missing nothing. I think it's his grace that he waits as long as he does. That's his grace in action, his mercy. But when God says it's enough, it's enough. Verse 14, so Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who had married his daughter. So there's at least two, right? It's plural. So he has at least two daughters and that are married, so two sons-in-law. The Lord being merciful to him, where did I go? And said, get up out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be what? He gets to sit in the city gate. He's accomplished in that area, but he absolutely has no spiritual standing with his family. And Lord, haven't heard that in a while. That wasn't in the context of a swear word or so, you know, whatever. What they'd say, but he had no spiritual clout that where they even took him seriously. Okay? So Lot warns his family. That's all I say there. Number 3, Lot warns his family. Number 4, we start in verse 15. When the morning dawned, the angels... I mean, it's already morning now. It's been all night long this is going on, right? When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here. We can't do anything about your family. They've rejected your warnings, lest you be consumed by the punishment of the city. And while he lingered, the men, you know, can you imagine the grief in his heart for his family that maybe was now ignited that it didn't exist before? That his influence spiritually was nothing, and that there was nothing he could do to rescue his family that was outside, right? So I get the lingering part. The men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him. Why? Because he wasn't even doing what he's told. And they brought him out and set him outside the city. They drug him out of the town. The Lord being merciful to him seems to be a mild understatement, doesn't it? I mean, not only did they warn him, urge him, but they finally just grabbed their hands and drug him out of the town, you know. Then verse 17, so it came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, escape for your life. Do not look back behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. Okay? So Lot is brought out of the city. In other words, it's passive in the sense that he didn't do the walking. You know, he was drugged, whatever, you know, but it was there.
This was the angels doing this.
Yes. Yep, the two men, the angels. I believe they are. And don't say anywhere in the plain. So when you're thinking about it here, again, you have the Dead Sea like this. Some people think that the whole lower part of the Dead Sea, which is a lot more shallow than up here, which is the deepest, lowest part in the world, how deep it is. And this is all tar and stuff underneath here. It bubbles up and things like that on the south end of the Dead Sea. They think this might have been the whole area that was destroyed. So it wasn't just like a little square here. No, it was like this huge area that then kind of slowly sunk underneath in that time. Okay, so it's at the bottom end of the Dead Sea. That's where it happened. It's shallow here. It's deep here. And there's all kinds of still the tar pit stuff and things like that that's going on. Okay? And that's what they, if you recall, when they got Lot and all his people and all those five cities got captured, they ran to the tar pits. Okay? They're all in that area. So they say, escape, do not stay in the plains, get in the mountains, because we're going to wipe the entire plains area out. So they weren't doing small spots. They were doing massive destruction here. Okay? Number 5, starting verse 18. Then Lot said to them, please know, my lords. Now this is interesting because you'll see it didn't help at all. Indeed, now your servant has found favor in your sight, which he had because he drug him out of town. And you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life, but I cannot escape to the mountains lest some evil overtake me and I die. You know, I haven't watched any of the Survivor shows. He doesn't know what he's doing. See now, this city is near enough to flee to, and it, by the way, the guy was a shepherd for years. That was probably a misrepresentation of his capability to survive. See now, the city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Please let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said to him, see, I have favored you concerning this thing, in that I will not overthrow this city for which you have spoken. See, it's multiple cities, what it appears to be. At least, we think it's five. At least five. The two biggest ones are Sodom and Gomorrah, that you hear a lot more about. But what's the name of this one? That they spared. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. That was the city that was spared. The sun had risen upon the earth when Lot entered Zoar. So, the angels had to wait till Lot was safe. There's a lot of theological implications and possibilities there. Flip your page over on the back, right below the grid. These are just some comments about the first section there. The king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah. Here's five cities, okay? And I think these are the five cities that were destroyed, maybe more. But this is when people kidnap Lot and all the people there. The king of Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboam, and Bela, or Zoar. Okay? And you see in Deuteronomy 29:23, the whole land is brimstone, salt, burning. It is not sown, nor does it bear, nor does it grow grass there, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboam. Do you see that? So there's four cities. Apparently there was going to be five. And Lot said, may it be just spare this one so I can live there. And they did. They did. There's other comments there you can see. Jude 1:7, the bottom one of that first section, as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them in a similar manner to these, having given themselves over to sexual immorality and gone after strange flesh. So it kind of says it very succinctly, whereas it describes it in Genesis. Okay? With me so far? All right, Lot, number 5 is Lot asks to go to Zoar. Number 6, the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. So he overthrew those cities, all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. So God judges the cities, and apparently there's at least 4 that are confirmed in Deuteronomy chapter 4 that we just showed you. So Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboim. Okay, and all of the inhabitants and everything that grew on the ground, everyone was killed, everything was burned up, it was gone. Verse 26, number 7, Lot's wife becomes a pillar of... Anyone want to explain that? I've heard it explained in a couple different ways. Some people, they think of it as table salt, a pillar of salt. Some people think it was an impact of whatever was done. It's almost like a nuclear explosion or something. But she was burnt up. She delayed and was burnt up. And, the chemical reaction turned her body into salt. Okay. So it wasn't just like clean white salt. She was probably fricasseed somehow. For lack of a better term. Remember, hurry up, get out of here. Don't look back. It says in verse 26, she did that. But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. And it kind of, from what I understand, the idea isn't just like this, whipping your head around and back. It's like she lingered and, like drug her feet kind of. It was more of a, not just a quick look. It was a longing back, and she got caught in the destruction. Okay.
Not to find favor with Lot's wife because she disobeyed what God said, but if we put ourselves in her shoes, and we knew that we had sons and daughters and possibly grandchildren.
Yeah, like Lot lingering.
And you all of a sudden realize that this is happening to them.
Yep.
Then.
Yeah. She didn't do herself any favors, though, by doing it.
But that's why God told her not to look back.
Right. It's interesting, but they could be delivered, and which they were, but at the same time, and we don't know when this was, because he did it, but somehow she was not where she should have been, or she would have been safe. So apparently, looking back, she stopped it out of grief and remorse, but she shouldn't have. She was told not to, right? But she apparently was not out of safety range. They couldn't do anything until Lot reached someplace, but apparently they could if his wife refused to go or something. I don't know. Okay. But she was destroyed, apparently. Pillar of salt is probably part of the result of that fire and brimstone kind of thing. Okay. By the way, there's all kinds of salt. You understand that, right? 9th grade science. There's tons of kind of salt. So it isn't just necessarily table salt, okay? So, but it appears that she got destroyed in the destruction because she lingered. Verse 27, number 8, Abraham went out early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord. Wow, this is devastating, but he goes out there. Abraham sees the results. This is number 8, yeah. Okay. He goes out there where he had pleaded with God to spare them. And then it goes on to say, he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plain. And he saw and behold the smoke of the land, which went up like the smoke of a furnace. I mean, this was not somebody burning leaves in the distance. The whole area was smoke, like a huge furnace. Okay.
Do you think Abraham was with Lot?
No. They had separated a long time ago. The last time they were together that we know was Genesis 14 when he went and rescued them. But verse 29, God remembers Abraham. This is interesting because it's kind of a commentary on what had happened. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. It's kind of like God took Abraham's intent. Even though he stopped at 10, God was willing to deliver any righteous and did. We don't know about Lot's wife. And again, it might be just from being overtaken by grief or whatever. We don't know. But she turned around and was destroyed. But God remembered Abraham and he quit at 10. God didn't quit at 10. Isn't that good? Like that. Verse 30. Then Lot went up out of Zoar. Didn't he flee to Zoar? He left Zoar. He was told to go to the mountains. He said, something bad will happen in the mountains. Let me go to this small city. Please spare that. Okay, we will. Hurry up and get there because we can't do anything until you get there. He's now leaving Zoar. I mean, right after this, right? And dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. He ran to the mountains after everything said no. Why? Why did he do that? Well, it says he's afraid. Speculate why.
Let's see. He moved out of the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. And guess who's to blame?
You. Yeah, just the people around him are like, most likely this is it. That's like, how come you got spared? What's the voodoo magic? I don't know. It doesn't say, but he was afraid. For himself, for what might happen.
Well, the thing is, you do realize that the picture again is, here he is, he's supposedly a righteous man.
Yes.
And they're living in a wicked life. And, wait a minute, this is not good for us if this man is, if he was in Sodom and they were destroyed.
Yeah, guilt by association, this might happen to us too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good thought too. Okay, this is some of the worst stuff in the Bible here in this chapter, and here's more of it. Okay. Now the firstborn said to the younger, the first of his two daughters, "Our father is old, and there's no man on the earth to come in to us as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him that we may preserve our lineage of our father." By the way, they think they're doing their father a favor. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. It happened then the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, "Indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, and you go in and lie with him that we may preserve the lineage of our father." Then they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. So they have the logic. They want to preserve the seed of their father. There's their plan. Let's get him drunk. Let's do the deed, so to speak. And both daughters did it, okay? So there's no blank there because I'm just stating fact. They're evil deeds. And then the last three verses, this is amazing too. Thus both daughters of Lot were with child by their father. Okay? The firstborn bore a son and called his name, what is it?
Moab.
Ever heard of Moab before? And he is the father of the Moabites today. Well, Ruth was a Moabite. Did you know that? The book of Ruth is Ruth the Moabitess, right? And the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ami, and she is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. That's the east side of the Jordan River, the Ammonites. So Lot's descendants by his daughters, Moab, he lost all his descendants, right? Except for these two, as we understand it. Moab, the father of the Moabites, and Ben-Ammi, the father of the Ammonites. Now, look at the very bottom of your notes here. Lot mentioned elsewhere, okay? And then I'll jump up one section here. Deuteronomy 2:9, the Lord said to me, do not harass Moab. They're talking about the area now. Nor contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot for a possession. God still cared for the descendants of Lot. Same chapter in Deuteronomy 2, starting verse 19. And when you come near to the people of Ammon, do not harass them or meddle with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the descendants of Lot as a possession. So God took care of the descendants of Lot. Isn't God good? If you ever feel like God's treating you unfairly, think again. You know, because God certainly bends over backwards for us, and he's given his only begotten son, obviously, but there's way more even. You know, just the, it says if he gave us his, given us his only son, won't he also freely give us all things? God's given us every good thing, right? And we get in the little pity parties and wonder why God's so mean to us. And it's like, wow. Even in the midst of all the tragedy of Lot's life, and by the way, you don't hear any mention of him anymore after this, but God still cared for his descendants. Luke 17, likewise as it was in the days of Lot, they ate, drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built, but on the day Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone, the whole idea that they weren't expecting it. And then 2 Peter, this is phenomenal. This is one of the verses, I believe, that shows that lordship salvation has serious issues, because God still calls Lot righteous, and he certainly didn't seem to be righteous on the outside. But he was righteous. Why? Why is anyone righteous? Because of what God has done, not because of what they do, right? So there must have been belief in Lot's life. We don't know the time or place, but Abraham believed God, and it was accounted for him for righteousness. Lot apparently did so too. Notice, in turning cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly. Oh, Sodom and Gomorrah is an example for everyone else. And delivered, what does it say? Might want to circle that or under, you know, that's like, that jumps out at me anyway. Who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. That doesn't mean he participated. He was just fine living in it. Right? And he had no spiritual weight with his children. Because apparently that wasn't really something he focused on or talked about. For that righteous man, he's called righteous again, dwelling among them, tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. He didn't participate with them, but he seemed to just want to stay there anyway. Now, I have just a couple more verses up above in this section. It says, compared to others. I think this is profound as well, because we oftentimes, and I'm saying it because I know I do at times, but I compare people's sins with mine. It's interesting. You remember reading how utterly wicked the people of Sodom and Gomorrah were from all quarters. Says they came to this house to get these two men. Matthew 10:15 says, Jesus says, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. He's talking about Chorazin and Bethsaida, the ones that heard the gospel preached and rejected it. God counted that worse. They had the truth. And they rejected it, so they are more accountable and more judged than those who did not. There's a couple more. And you, Capernaum, this is Matthew 11:23, who are exalted to heaven will be brought down to Hades. For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Sodom, it would have remained to this day. Kind of implying that they would have repented. If they would have had the same works there. Mark 6:11, and whoever will not receive you nor hear you, when you depart from there, shake off the dust under your feet as a testimony against them. Assuredly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in that day of judgment than for that city. When they hear the gospel and they reject it, they will be counted more condemned than Sodom and Gomorrah who did not hear the gospel. And Luke 10:12 says the same thing. But I say to you that it will be more tolerable in that day for Sodom than for that city. That resets me a little bit. And God in no way is saying homosexuality is fine or whatever. He's just saying that rejecting the word of God is even more grave. Okay? Because they did not have the chance, so that their judgment will not be as harsh as those that did. They'll still be in the lake of fire, but I believe there's levels. And the people in these cities, like Capernaum, when Jesus preached the gospel, will be judged worse. In the day of judgment, than even the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. And that shows you the righteousness of God, and the power of the gospel, and the accountability that people have once they hear the gospel. It's huge. Questions or comments?